We'll move to our last case, Gross versus Knight. Mr. Anderson.
Good morning, Your Honors. Ms. Nicholas. May it please the Court, my name is Mike Anderson of Mayor Brown on behalf of Petitioner Appellant Jeremy Gross. Your Honors, this is admittedly a difficult case. It involves a defendant who on one night of his young life committed a monstrous act. And it involves a competent trial counsel who, by and large, put forth a thorough and well-intended capital murder defense. But, Your Honors, that lawyer made one error. And it was an error that cuts to the core of one of the most fundamental rights afforded criminal.
He argued to the jury in the penalty phase that Gross should receive a term of years rather than life.
I believe the thrust of his arguments, Your Honor, was to avoid the death penalty. I do not recall. I know at the sentencing phase before the judge, I recall him arguing for a term of years. I don't recall during his closing if he specifically asked for that, Your Honor.
But you're not citing that as ineffective assistance.
No, Your Honor. The error the counsel made was failing to consult with his client about the decision.
Yeah, what I don't understand, so look, you could argue you shouldn't sentence me to death, you shouldn't sentence me to life, just sentence me to a term of years. That's probably a very bad argument to make. Because if the government is asking for the death penalty, and it's a very, unpleasant crime, if the jury starts thinking this person may get, might get out, that makes them lean toward death. So you don't want to get the years in there. If he's not going to argue to the jury for anything except life in prison, then what good would Gross's testifying have done?
But, Your Honor, I'm not sure he wouldn't have argued for a term of years. Young Gross was 18 years old.
Did he?
I believe he was. His thrust, Your Honor, yes, was asking to avoid the death penalty. That clearly was the most important thing.
But you're not saying that that it was ineffective assistance not to argue for a term of years. So if that wasn't ineffective assistance, how is the failure to call Gross or failure to ask Gross whether he wanted to testify? Why would that be material?
Your Honor, it's not the failure, the strategic decision of what to argue to the jury that we're contesting. You're correct. You're completely correct. We're arguing that it was his failure to consult with Gross about whether Gross would have taken the stand. In our position, Your Honor,
if Gross had been sentenced to death, then I would understand your argument. But if he got what the lawyer wanted for him, which was the life imprisonment, what difference does it make whether he testifies or doesn't testify?
I wouldn't concede, Your Honor, that the lawyer was asking for life without the possibility of parole. He was first and foremost seeking to avoid the death penalty. I would argue, Your Honor, that there is a better than negligible chance that a jury would have looked at this young man, 18 years old, looked at the history of his life, and thought that someday, decades from now...
Well, would you gamble on that? That is, would you want to go back and have another death penalty hearing?
Gross has been consulted on that thoroughly, Your Honor, and yes, he would. He is
That'd
perfectly...
That'd be crazy.
Your Honor,
he wants to have another hearing in which he's going to be sentenced to death because he testifies and argues that he should just be given a term of years?
Your Honor, Mr. Gross has been incarcerated since he was 18. The prospect of living out his days until he is 70 and dying in a prison cell does not appeal to him. He is fully aware that there is the potential that he could face a stiffer punishment if he gets a resentencing hearing. But he is also aware that there is at least a possibility that someday the jury might decide that he was willing. Yes, sir.
The problem with putting the person on the stand, of course, is that he's going to be cross-examined, which means everything is going to come out a second time. And also, a skillful cross-examiner dealing with a murderer is going to... He's going to kill him.
Your Honor, there was...
He's going to ask him things like, well, he's going to try to get him to justify the murder, right? That's what you do when you're cross-examining these people. Because then, of course, he looks much worse in the eyes of the jury, right? You say to him, well, you must have had a reason for shooting him. Was it, afraid he'd report you, or did you just not like his manner and you thought he was being rude and he should have cooperated with you and Maybe you think he really had it coming.
Your Honor, I'd argue two things. First of all,
you're finished, right?
I see, Your Honor. I would argue two things, though. First of all, the jury saw all of the evidence, both of this crime.
Yeah, but it didn't have him being pulled apart on cross-examination.
It did not. But, Your Honor, also, that to say that it would have been a wise strategic decision not to advise him to testify, certainly that could be within the objective realms of reasonableness. But in this case, in every court, every circuit to have considered this issue, including the United States Supreme Court, has said that failure to consult with your client is not strategy.
Commit suicide? I don't understand.
Well, Your Honor, it is the client's fundamental choice, and that is something the Supreme Court...
allowed to commit...
not to commit suicide, Your Honor.
You're not allowed, as a criminal defendant, are you? I suppose you don't have to appeal if you're sentenced to death.
Well, Your Honor, I don't concede it would have been suicide. Secondly, I do think that the fundamental right is the client's. That's what this court has held in Canaan. That's what
sense does it make?
Well, Your Honor, again, this is not a question of strategy. It's not whether he should have testified. It's whether he...
Senseless. I don't understand. Why's anyone...
But, Your Honor, the counsel...
Social interest in having him get another death penalty hearing.
The social interest would be preserving the right of a client
so
to testify.
Abstract and so...
I understand, Your Honor, that the rights may be abstract.
A waste of resources.
Well, Your Honor, I would look at the testimony from the trial counsel. The words he said at the post-conviction hearing, they were frankly stunning. He used words like told, instructed. When asked if there was give and take, he said there was not give and take. He said, sure, there was give and take, the way there would be give and take with the way there would be with my 9-year-old son about whether he needs to clean his room. Quote, this is the way it's going to be. If nothing else, Your Honor, I'd argue the social interest.
That's right.
But I'd argue, Your Honor, that if nothing else, the social interest would be preserving and setting the standard and reaffirming
that it's abstract, and I just don't get it.
Your Honor,
what did Judge Young say with regard to your position?
To which part of it, Your Honor?
Well, advising him not to testify.
Simply, Judge Young held that it was a reasonable opinion issued by the Indiana State Courts. I would disagree with that. Judge Young, Your Honor, did, I believe, make one mistake. He held that the Indiana Court of Appeals ruled against Gross on both the performance and the prejudice prong. That's, I believe, clearly erroneous. The Indiana Court of Appeals ruled against Gross solely on its analysis of the prejudice prong. And to that, we'd argue, Your Honor, they held that
prejudice, you're saying, is that he'd like to roll the dice and either get executed or have a term of years.
But, Your Honor, just like the decision to testify is fundamental and personal to the defendant, so is the decision to press this appeal. We may not think it's wise, but that's not our choice to make, Your Honor. Young Gross looks at the options. He's fully apprised of them, and he feels that this is something he needs to press.
I guess my question is a credibility finding with regard to what, not credibility, but what the facts were. They seem to be somewhat unclear what the trial counsel told him and his attitude and so forth. And is the record, or do you think, is... totally clear on how that happened?
No. The record could be more perfect, Your Honor. Trial counsel, though, took the stand and said, I don't remember discussing it with Jeremy. I'm sure I did, and I'm sure I just told him it wasn't going to happen. He said he, quote, probably would have forced Gross not to take the stand had it come to that.
He said he was scared to death, right?
Gross was scared to death. I think any young man facing the death penalty or life without parole.
Different from your roll the dice argument, which I don't think you made in your brief, did you?
Your Honor, the thrust of Gross's argument is not whether it's a wise decision to roll the dice and get a new sentencing hearing. That's,
no,
I would argue,
very important to the issue of harmless error, because your argument is that it's not harmless because he'd actually prefer to risk being executed than have this life sentence.
Your Honor,
I don't think you argued it in your brief.
First, I'd like to clarify, Your Honor, that harmless error is not the standard. The standard here is a reasonable probability or a better than negligible chance. And I think, Your Honor...
Where is it better than negligible from?
On 5 occasions, Your Honor, including in Canaan versus McBride, this circuit has held that a reasonable probability, which the Supreme Court explains, is not a preponderance of the evidence standard. It's not better than 50-50. This court has described it as synonymous.
It is better than negligible. What does that add? Just more semantic confusion.
It's this court circuit, Your Honor, has held that it's synonymous. That is its way of explaining what a reasonable probability means.
It's words.
That may be, Your Honor. They're not my words.
If it weren't for the roll of dice, then whatever standard of harmlessness you want, this would be harmless because he couldn't benefit from being able to testify?
Your Honor, I think, yes, sir. I would argue that to say that no possible jury could enter a sentencing recommendation of anything less than life without parole is too far of a leap, Your Honor.
The judge could have given the sentence you were requesting now.
I see I'm into my time. May I continue, Your Honor?
Well, he asked you a question. The judge asked you a question.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
And you're asked a question. You're expected to answer.
I will, Your Honor. Sir, the Indiana legislature conferred upon criminal defendants the right to have a jury make a recommendation to the judge. That's something they feel so strongly about that that recommendation now is binding upon the judges. And I would say that to hold... It was not binding at that time, Your Honor, but it was such an important factor.
That was my point. So he was able to make his mitigation argument to the judge, correct?
He did, Your Honor, but I'd argue two things. One, that the legislature conferred upon him the right to have a jury make this recommendation. They felt that was crucial and fundamental. And secondly, Your Honor, I'd invite you to review the court sentencing colloquy. When she comes in, it seems rather apparent her mind was made up. She didn't reference his apology at the sentencing hearing. She didn't reference his remorse. She referenced the jury's recommendation and the facts of the crime. He went directly from his allocution to her sentencing prepared, canned sentence, and I would argue, Your Honor, that it was not effective to put him forth.
Why does apology make a difference?
Your Honor, the Indiana Supreme Court has found that a sincere apology to the victim's family.
A person in cold blood and then say, I'm very sorry. I'm sorry.
Clearly, Your Honor.
Especially since I don't want to have life imprisonment or be executed.
Certainly, Your Honor, it does not make up for what happened that day. But I think the Indiana Supreme Court.
Why would anyone pay any attention to an apology for murder?
I don't know, Your Honor, but under Indiana Supreme Court law, that is a proper mitigator for a jury to consider.
This is a dream world, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, Your Honor.
There's no connection to reality in what you're arguing.
I think, Your Honor, there is clearly a better than negligible chance that if Gross had taken the stand, if he had shown the heartfelt, sincere remorse and apology that showed up every other time he was invited to express that, there is at least a possibility that this jury would have looked at his tortured young life, looked at the fact that he was 18 years old the day he committed this crime and 20 when he faced sentencing, and think that just perhaps someday, decades down the line, he deserves the opportunity to spend his final days outside of a prison cell.
Well, anything is possible. That's true.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so thank you. Thank you very much,
thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Anderson. Mr. Miklos? I mean, Miss Miklos, sorry.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, the Indiana State Court's adjudication of Mr. Gross's ineffective assistance of counsel claim was reasonable. Gross was sufficiently advised of his right to testify at the penalty phase of his capital trial, and Gross failed to show that he suffered prejudice from his counsel's advisement. Mr. Gross had little to gain, if anything, and everything to lose by taking the stand. Although Gross has never presented evidence that he was not advised of his right to testify, that he even desired to testify, or to what he would testify to, Mr. Gross's complaint is that if the jury had only heard him deliver a message of remorse in open court, the only import of that would be that they would recommend a term of years.
But we're here to decide whether or not counsel's performance was deficient. And we have a counsel who admitted that he not only advised his clients as a matter of course not to testify, but that he would insist on it and would even force his clients not to testify, even if he did so because he thought it was in the client's interest. Doesn't that quite clearly establish that he did not leave to the client the decision as to whether to testify? And isn't it firmly established in the case law that the decision must be left to the client?
Yes, Your Honor, the decision must be left to the client, but if Mr. Gross did so, he was doing it against his counsel's strong advisement not to. Mr. Hill spent a year and a half to 2 years representing Gross, weekly visits, consulting with him.
But I don't see where that would matter. If one has a right, one has a right.
Gross has never argued that he was forced not to testify, that his attorney stood in the way of him testifying.
No, his attorney, he has better than that. His attorney testified, the very person.
What he has is it was a hypothetical question posed to Mr. Hill, and it said, would you force him? And Mr. Hill said, probably. And then the follow-up question was, how would you do that? And Mr. Hill said, I would insist that he not do it. Mr. Hill was adamant that this was not the best thing for his client, facing the death penalty, and he stood by that. And he, in his, response to would you force him would be, I would insist on him not testifying, and that's clearly within prevailing professional norms. And, in fact, the trial court recognized that this is a reasonable opinion held by the defense bar for attorneys not to have their clients in capital trials testify. And in this case, there was significant conclusive evidence of guilt.
How could a defendant demonstrate prejudice in a case like this? Is there any realistic way to determine the impact that an expression of remorse might have on a jury?
Yes.
Can we ever really know this?
Yes, and in Canaan, this court found that it was prejudicial because the attorney put forth no mitigating evidence. So the only evidence that would have been presented was the defendant's expression of remorse. There was no mitigation. But here there was approximately 37 witnesses that testified about Gross's entire life. Statements of remorse that Mr. Gross made in front of local news media, that was presented to the jury. There was a police officer that testified that Gross was remorseful during a statement. That was seen by the jury and reiterated by Mr. Hill in his closing argument. Mr. Hill stood there and said, my client is remorseful for this.
But does that take the place of the client saying, I am?
In this case,
Mike, do you want to finish my sentence? Remorseful.
In this case, it does, Your Honor, because he would have been subjecting himself to cross-examination by the prosecutors. And so he was rolling the dice. He was taking a risk. He just can't get up there and say to the jury, I'm sorry, I'm remorseful. He does so, and he will be subjected to the cross-examination of the prosecutor, which could totally undermine the entire mitigation presentation presented by his attorneys.
This is really apples and oranges. Either an individual has a right or an individual doesn't have a right. If an individual has a right, and you have an attorney saying, I just wouldn't allow this, then that person's right has been taken from him.
Only if there's evidence to support that, and here there isn't. There is no evidence that Gross would have testified, wanted to testify, communicated this to his attorney. And, in fact, Mr. Hill describes Mr. Gross as being scared to death, that Mr. Gross was a great client, that he was cooperative, and that he listened to them. So it's reasonable to infer that Mr. Gross relied on Mr. Hill's expertise. He had conducted 15 capital trials, 20 to 30 murder trials. He was experienced, and that Mr. Gross deferred to Mr. Hill's experience. And under those circumstances, there was no trampoline of Mr. Gross's right to testify. It was still his right. It was not taken from him. Mm-hmm. Your Honors, if there are no further questions, we ask that this court affirm the district court in all respects. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, and thank you to Mr. Brindley for your excellent efforts on behalf of your client. And the court will be in recess till 9:30 tomorrow.